Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, July the 25th, as we like to do on Sunday. On Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into. This is going to be a very interesting week because a lot of economic information is going to be released this week. And perhaps the most important information is the GDP information that supposedly will come out on Thursday. And that will tell us what is the state of the economy. We already had one quarter of negative economic growth, so the next one could tell us whether or not we're formally in a recession. So a lot on the ball today, a lot to talk about. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill? How's the weather in New York?
Well, the weather is very, very strange, Silvio. We had an event this morning that was unprecedented. You know, I've been complaining all the time that I've been on this broadcast about the weather reports in New York, you know, from the New York Weather Bureau and Grill, which is located someplace downtown, that they give you these dire forecasts. The world is coming to an end. You're going to be flooded. You won't even be able to live on the 14th floor. And then nothing happens. It just goes on and on and on. Well, this morning, my weather radio, my Midland, went off, as it has many times in the last week, warning about thunderstorms, severe thunderstorms coming. And then they list, as our Weather Bureau does, all the areas that are affected. And it didn't include ours. And I said, oh, thank goodness. We're not going to go through this again where people start to panic. So I relaxed, did some work. And about an hour later, we had a severe deluge. I mean, Noah would have been proud to be in that deluge and to build his ark. The rain was just coming down in torrents. No prediction, no warning, no nothing. I do not know what we are going to do with the local Weather Bureau, but I think there may be some McDonald's franchises available for them to take over when they begin to learn the job. But that's the weather here. So right now it's sunny.
Well,
it's sunny, but it was raining horribly before.
Yes. Well, I wish we had some rain because we've had 11 consecutive days of 100-plus. So the good news is that we have seen this before. In fact, in 2011, in 1998, 1988, even going back to 1904, Bill, can you believe it? Before we actually had climate change and global warming, we had days and days of temperatures of 100. I couldn't believe that. I just thought that it was only because of fossil fuels, Bill.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, this is something that I find fascinating, and that is that the journalists, or the people who call themselves journalists, who give us the news, will not really ask any tough questions because they have been taught that global warming is part of their religion. And so you don't ask questions. But the reality is I've always had one question about global warming. In World War II, more fossil fuel explosions occurred on the Earth than at any other time in human history. Just thousands and thousands of bombs giving off this stuff. And there was no rise in global warming. I'd like to know why. I wish somebody would ask the question. I mean, I'm not a denier. I don't deny that global warming is occurring. I'm, as the late Charles Krauthammer said, I'm a skeptic. I want to know more. I want to know more information about these predictions that, if we follow them, will cost trillions and trillions of dollars in so-called green energy equipment that we don't even have and may not produce any result. I want to know more about it before we write those checks, and we're not being given the information. We're just being told that if we have any questions, we're idiots.
That's right. If you question any of it, you're a denier and you're an idiot, and we're going to suspend you from certain social media. But there was something very interesting that did happen on Sunday. Former Vice President Al Gore was on Meet the Press, and he made what I think is one of the most outrageous, irresponsible statements, where he compared, he said, climate change deniers, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty close, climate change deniers are like those police officers at the Uvalde school who were hearing the
awful,
didn't do it. And I just say to myself, how ridiculous is that? Now, I did not see the interview, so I don't know what Chuck Todd said, the host of Meet the Press. I wish I could see the video. I haven't seen it. But how awful. You're right. I mean, and to bring more pain to that community and to those people down there by somehow bringing climate change into the equation, I just found it troubling, Bill. But this is, I think, the problem with climate change and with global warming and all of these things, is that I don't deny that it's happening, but I wish they would get different faces. I think the movement needs different faces, different spokespeople, because the ones they have, Bill, are nothing but a bunch of alarmists and a bunch of hysterical people, Bill.
Well, that's the point. I mean, they tell us if we do not do something now, the world will disappear in 14 years. And it will not disappear in 14 years. The press makes no effort to get true, thoughtful experts on the air to discuss the nuances of this, to discuss what would happen if, for example, we did nothing and just let it happen. What would be the actual result here and in other countries as well? I want to know. That it may or may not influence my opinion, but I think we ought to be told. And another thing I think we ought to be told is we're being asked to invest trillions of dollars, which will come right out of our own pockets, coming from other programs that could be so useful in education, in healthcare, in invention, in research. And yet we're not told what the actual effect of all these expenditures will be. If the global warmers predict, for example, and this is a figure I'm just making up, that global warming will produce a temperature average each day of plus 4 degrees from where we are today, what will the application of all these programs do to that plus 4%? Will it reduce it by minus 4%? Will it eliminate it at all? Will it have an effect of maybe a 1% reduction? We may be spending all this money for a reduction that doesn't even mean anything, and that money is then gone, but you can be sure who has it. I mean, there'll be a lot of mansions built around Barack Obama's house in Massachusetts. And I think we are suffering on this story, as on so many, from a very negligent and indifferent press that just doesn't want to rock the apple boat, because they know most of their friends who go to cocktail parties in Washington accept this, and they're not going to raise any questions, and they really should. They really should.
Well, I think so too. I mean, I like to know exactly, you know, what are, like you say, you know, what exactly are all these consequences? We keep hearing about how the world is going to end in I don't know how many years, but we heard those predictions 20 years ago. I mean, Al Gore himself made a bunch of lousy predictions that have not come true. But he, for some reason, he never gets those questions. When he's doing these television interviews, nobody says, well, Mr. Vice President, with all due respect, here are some of the things you said, and here are some of the things that did not happen. So what makes you more believable now? Now we have a record. Now we can actually compare what he predicted with what has happened, and yet nobody will challenge him on that. Nobody questions it. And like you said, Bill, if you question it, then you are a denier, as they say. You don't care about the trees and the polar bears and all this kind of stuff. You hate, you know, you want to live in a world that is polluted by capitalism. No, I want to live in, I'm just as interested in fresh air and clean water as the next guy. I just want to understand the problem better, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, that, you know, part of the technique of the global warming movement was derived from Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, one of which is to ridicule and bring contempt upon your opponent. So we get very few scientific demonstrations. We just get a lot of hysteria that you're deniers and you're going to deny children clean air and you're going to deny your own children clean air and the world will begin to fade away and it'll be your fault. And that's what we're getting. And you have news organizations like CNN today that will not admit of any possible wrong in some of these theories. And I think that is one of the things that really bothers the American people.
Yes. No, I think you're right. I think the good news about CNN is less American people are watching it, which may be...
Yes.
The American people may be voting with their little channel switcher or whatever they
call
remotes.
That thing.
They're remotes. I think they're voting. They're voting with that. Of course, tied into the climate change, and you wrote a post about this here recently, Bill, is the electric automobile. I guess the solution to our problems is to raise the price of gasoline to $10, and then everybody will go out and buy an electric car. That's the solution to every problem.
Yes.
We just don't have enough electric cars. And as I've said many times, I have nothing against electric cars. I just wish that they were cheaper and that they would go more miles. That's all I want. You know, I just want a car I don't want to buy a house when I buy an electric car. And I don't want to drive to San Antonio and have to stop somewhere for 3 hours to charge my car bill.
That's exactly the point. And they don't want to answer those questions either. But they're making it plain that they want people not to drive cars. Because if we drive cars, the world will come to an end. Not only will the world come to an end, but you will be driving off the flat part of the world. The car is just going to disappear because everybody knows the world is flat. I mean, nobody questions that anymore. The world is flat. I mean, it is completely ridiculous. It has no real science behind it. And people cannot afford $60,000 or even $40,000 for an electric car, and an electric car that would be considerably less useful than a gasoline-powered car because, as you just pointed out, you have to stop to charge it. Now, if you're a good boy and you charge it every morning, well, what is that going to turn into? Tens of millions of cars are going to be using chargers every morning in America or every evening in America. How much electricity is that going to need, and who's going to provide that electricity, and why won't the global warmers stop it?
I do too. I think everybody does, Bill. I mean, this is the point where people are saying, okay, so you want me to buy an electric car. Okay, well, it's too expensive. And I'm charging my car every morning, like you're indicating, or every night. Well, you know, am I going to pay more for electricity now? My electricity bill is going to go up. And where is that electricity coming from? I mean, is there some mysterious place? No, it's probably coming from a plant, a nuclear plant, or a fossil fuels plant, or maybe coal or carbon, whatever. So it seems like you're burning more over here to save over here, but at the end of the day, what difference does it make? And another point, Bill, that irritates me is, why aren't these people marching in front of the Chinese embassy and calling on China to do something about climate change? Why is it that it's always the United States, Bill?
That's right. That's exactly right. China runs a lot of dirty plants. So do other companies. There is consideration being given as we speak to even West European countries going back to coal energy because there's a shortfall. They cannot make up that shortfall. They also are very dependent on imports from Russia to run anything. I mean, they really messed up badly, the Europeans. They saw things that they wanted. And, well, we can have them if only we get rid of fossil fuels. And they started to get rid of fossil fuels. It turned out there was no gift out there. They are somewhat successful in the generation of electricity, but very often it's being generated with old electric generators, the kind of things that the global warmers want to eliminate. There is so much hypocrisy in this that I have to believe there's also criminality. And I want to know why the American press has reported this story so thinly.
Yes, no, I agree. And then, of course, I mean, here in Texas, we're having obviously a very hot summer. We've had like 11 or 12 days now of consecutive 100 degrees. The power grid, you know, the people who run the power grid, they're mm-hmm. telling everybody that, you know, we're not going to shut it off, but we would appreciate if you don't use your all your appliances and some things like don't wash your clothes between 2 and 8 in the afternoon. Just turn down the air conditioner just a little bit, just so that we can all conserve. It seems to be working, by the way. People are complying, and it seems to be working. The power grid is doing just fine. But then we learn that solar energy and wind energy are not exactly working out that well. And because wind energy without wind is pretty useless, Bill. So, I guess without the wind, you know, these little propellers or whatever they are, they're not turning enough to do whatever they were supposed to do. So if you don't have a windy summer, then I guess you don't have electricity, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, they never do the basic research. I mean, they come out with these warnings. If you do not address this problem satisfactorily and through the UN, your country will disappear within 10 years and no one will ever hear of it again. And they say things almost as silly as that. And the UN, of course, being the UN, which is, you know, nothing equals the UN in silliness, goes right along with it. Is there global warming? Yes, there probably is global warming. We're not deniers. And it may very well be doing some damage. Well, it may also be true that if we just ignore it and let it do some minimal damage, we will have some small result, but we will prove that it's not going to destroy the world. I think that the rational side here, as represented by Professor Morgenthau at the University of Chicago, that the more rational people don't want this kind of a confrontation. They want the problem of global warming to be fixed thoughtfully and intelligently over the years, and even if it means fixing it with the use of high-speed energy producers, which are actually available to us. But what is being done now is so harmful, not only to the image of science, it is harmful to the development of children's minds, because they're being propagandized on this every day in the nation's schools by teachers who tell them it's a public service. They're not permitted to ask any questions. The recent activity by a jury in Washington didn't even was a grand jury, so there was no cross-examination. And I think more and more people are realizing that this is a fast hustle that they will not gain, but the people running the hustle will gain.
Well, that's it. And the other question I have is, like, you know, we keep hearing about this summer heat down here and this heat wave, and they automatically blame it on fossil fuels or the use of fossil fuels.
Yes.
And I'm sitting there saying, well, okay, but how do you know that? I mean, how do they actually know that? I mean, has there actually ever been a study that confirms that? There's a lot of opinions about it, but there's never been really an independent study that says, you know, because we're burning all these fossil fuels, you're getting a heat wave in Texas in August or July. But, you know, 100 years ago, you got the same heat wave. But I guess something else caused it 100 years ago. Maybe there were too many people were using horses 100 years ago, Bill.
That's right.
What caused it. I mean, the whole thing, there's so much opinion and so little fact. And then you have, of course, Vice President Gore saying what he said. If I was talking to a group of climate change people, I would say, folks, I don't deny that there's climate change, but you need to get a different – your movement needs a different face. You need a different message. You have to be – you know, you cannot tell people that everything is going to heck, because they're not going to buy into that, Bill.
That's right. Look, one of the things that we are suffering from right now is the corruption of journalism, the corruption of the flow of information that is critical to the operation of a democracy. If you dare to criticize the press, and if you are a Republican doing it, you're called a anti-freedom, anti-First Amendment, a friend of enemies of this country. But the fact of the matter is that unless we get the right questions asked at press conferences with demands for answers, we're going to be in pretty tough shape as a nation.
Exactly. Well, I guess the big story, Bill, the last couple of days is that President Biden has COVID. Now, I'm beginning to wonder if that's even a big story anymore, because Senator Manchin has COVID. The lieutenant governor of Texas now has COVID. Senator from New York, the majority leader, had COVID.
Yes, Schumer, Chuck Schumer.
Schumer. And It's crazy, Bill. Maybe it's me, but over the last 3 or 4 months, more people have gotten COVID, and they're doing okay. They survive it. They get COVID, they're at home for a few days, and they're back to work, and everything's fine. So hopefully that's the same thing that happens to the president. It looks that way. It looks like the reports are very encouraging from President Biden. But if that's the way it is, why are we being told that there's a new wave coming and that we got to wear a mask all over again, Bill?
Well, that's a $64,000 question. And I think it has a lot to do with the ego of the people involved, with the researchers who don't want to see their research drop down the vein or flush down the vein because their lives and their reputations are dependent on it. I mean, you have a situation where over a period of years, a number of people have invested their reputations in global warming. If global warming doesn't occur, their reputations are finished. And it is amazing what people will do to preserve their reputations.
Yeah, especially when they run universities, you know.
Right.
And they have
their
departments invested in this theory. I mean, what are they going to do? Come out and say, you know what? What we told you for the last 10 years is wrong. So we apologize for misinforming you, I guess, or something like that. But it's just incredible. It's just incredible. Now, of course, President Biden is going to declare a climate emergency. Exactly what that means and what he does, I have no idea, Bill. What do you do when you have a climate emergency? What's he going to do? He doesn't. He has to go to Congress, I guess, for it. But what kind of? I mean, is he going to declare war on climate change, Bill?
I think so. I think so. And he's going to apparently by decree order that everyone carry around a sack of ice cubes. We will all be watching tomorrow for the sack of ice cubes. We'll be having that. I saw a list yesterday of some of the things that he will presumably do, because actually the government specifications on this are pretty thin. But he will go after people who still use fossil fuels at work, to clean restaurants, to go to school when in fact there are public means available, things like that. I mean, if you start going beyond that, you're getting into a situation where you begin to affect people's sacred lifestyles, the things they want to do every day and have been able to do, and you better come up with a good answer as to why you're doing it, and they don't have that answer.
No. No, and I assume that it's all going to be done by executive order, which means that most of these executive orders are going to be in the courts within seconds that they're issued. And, you know, we'll end up in the courts. And frankly, President Biden is not doing very well in the courts. Whenever anything goes to the courts, he loses. So I would be careful doing many more of these climate emergencies. I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, what is he going to do? Tell the temperatures to come down because it's more patriotic for low temperatures? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's like you're just kind of sitting here wondering what he's going to do. But the fact that the president has COVID and he seems to be doing well, I think at least it says to me that it's time to get over the pandemic and accept that it can happen to anybody. And if it happens, obviously you got to take care of yourself and get attention. But I don't see the hospitals filling up with COVID. I see people getting COVID, but I don't see the hospitals and the healthcare system falling apart because of COVID, Bill.
That's exactly right. And fortunately, we have the vaccine that's with us. But again, we go back to the flow of information, what the American people are told to believe. And, you know, if we get an outbreak of COVID-19 this winter, what will they be told? Will they be told that they are the sinners? And only if they get rid of their ordinary car will they be able to be redeemed in the eyes of the god dryness. Dryness is a very important god, very important. And you are going into a situation where we have not been before, because there are projections of what will happen if you don't engage in all these activities that are going to cost trillions of dollars, or what you will see. And it is amazing how little the Washington Press Corps asks the president and his representatives about this when there are news conferences. It's as if they don't care either.
No, they don't. I mean, it's almost as if they have I don't know if they have orders from above not to ask these questions or if the reporters are just not curious. But you would think that a reporter, that the instincts of a reporter should be curiosity, but they don't seem to be interested at all in any of this. But again, life goes on. I guess we're going to get more climate emergencies. We're seeing climate problems or reactions to it in Europe with these farmers complaining about this or this or that. A lot of people are saying that these climate regulations are actually hurting the farmers and people in the third world. I don't know if that's true, but that's what we're hearing, Bill.
Well, we are hearing it. And the fact is we are also not getting opinions from around the world as to the undesirability of global warming. There are many countries that have said privately or whose officials have said privately that global warming is good for most of our people because it changes the temperature of the atmosphere and ours is a little low. So there are so many different sides in this. But fear that is being spread that unless we do exactly what we're told to do, terrible things will happen to us and our families, that has got to be brought under some control. We don't have a legal mechanism to do it, but you'd think the profession of journalism would, as members of that profession, would get together, hold a conference, and make recommendations, but they won't.
No, they won't. They simply won't. But again, to me, this whole climate change movement is worthless if they're not marching at the Chinese embassy. The day that I see these climate change activists marching at every Chinese embassy, let's say in Canada, in the United States, in Europe, the day that I see a massive march against China, calling on China to at least do something about climate change, the day that I see that, then maybe I'll feel better. But it just seems to be directed at the United States. It's always the United States that is guilty for everything. And that's when they lose me, Bill, because what that says to me is that this is politically oriented, not scientific oriented, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right. And that is the danger, that anybody can come along with a slogan, look for a couple of inaccurate polls that will be displayed, I guess, at the library commemorating this event, and will be in a position to ask, why did you do the maximum so quickly when you didn't have evidence to back you up? I yet to hear that question.
That's exactly right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back. We got a lot more to get into with our friend Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz. Bill, a quick detour. Your old favorite Gil Hodges is now in the Hall of Fame. He obviously passed away years ago, but his daughter gave a great speech at his induction. So Gil Hodges, one of the old Brooklyn Dodgers, is in the Hall of Fame. So that means that Gil Hodges, Jackie Robinson, Pee Wee Reese, they're in. That's a pretty good infield in the Hall of Fame, Bill.
It really is. This has been long overdue. Gil Hodges was one of my favorite players on the old Brooklyn Dodgers, and I think the favorite of many because he not only was a great first baseman, he was a gentleman of the game. He had a wonderful reputation as a person. He had fought in World War II and was wounded on Okinawa, came back, became a great first baseman for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Died tragically at the age of 48. He had become the manager of the New York Mets, which must have been the crowning glory of his career, to be a manager of a team. And then one day he just died of a heart attack. I think it was over 50 years ago. And his family still lives in Brooklyn. Family still lives in Brooklyn, very loyal to Brooklyn, wonderful family. And I think this was an honor that was due for a long time, and I'm glad it finally came.
Yes, of course, he managed the Mets when they won the World Series. That was the
That's
other
right.
the other thing, too, I forgot Joe Campanella is also in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, Roy Campanella is.
Roy Campanella, right. Roy Campanella.
And a man who was a great successor to other Dodger catchers. He was the catcher of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Roy was. Succeeded Bruce Edwards, number 10. Roy was number 39. And one night he was driving, had an accident, and was left paralyzed from the neck down. Ended his baseball career on a tragic note. I think he's long gone, but he did exist after that. I mean, he didn't disappear. He lived in a wheelchair. I think he started a business in Harlem. But Roy was also he was a great catcher. It was a great team. It was a team that existed really, and aside from existing in our imagination, it existed in reality in the post-war years of the 1940s and into the 1950s, and existed until the horrible decision was made to move the Brooklyn Dodgers to Los Angeles.
Campanella won.
Yeah.
I was going to say Campanella won the MVP three times. So he was quite a, not only a player, but he was quite a leader. But I'm really, really thrilled that Gil Hodges got in. And for me, I wanted to say something real quickly about the Hall of Fame. I was really reminded of my father yesterday during the Hall of Fame because Minnie Minoso, who was a real favorite of my father, and is in the Hall of Fame. And it took, it took a long time. But you probably remember Minnie Minoso from the 50s.
Yes.
And he was a great player, too. And as a little boy, I remember my father taking us to games in Cuba and watching Minnie Minoso in the Winter League. And you know, obviously I was too little to remember, but my father would always talk about Minnie Minoso. And so my dad's pretty happy today because he always thought that Minoso should be in the Hall of Fame, and he is. So I was very thrilled when that happened. I think my dad was pretty happy about that decision, Bill.
I'm sure he was. Well, I've always believed that the Hall of Fame should have a little addition built onto it, the villains of baseball. And right at the top will be the man who took the Brooklyn Dodgers to Los Angeles.
Right.
His name was Walter O'Malley. He was the owner of the Dodgers. And Pete Hamill, one of the great New York reporters, used to say that in Brooklyn there were three villains, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Walter O'Malley. And
yes,
not necessarily in that order. He took the heart out of Brooklyn. It wasn't completely the fault of the Dodgers, though. New York City did not really have any plan to keep them there. And
yes,
there was a kind of coldness about it. Some of the people who were on the side of the Dodgers and trying to keep them there were not the most pleasant people to deal with. And it just happened, and it happened very, very quickly. We just got up one morning and realized it was gone. All this era was over, and people today do not understand the attachment people had to baseball in New York in the 1950s when we had three major league teams, the Brooklyn Dodgers, the New York Giants, and the unspeakable Yankees. And the the only one that survives is the unspeakable Yankees, which, as the late Roger Kahn said, was the best team money could buy, but that rooting for the New York Yankees was like rooting for U.S. Steel. I mean, it was very much a corporate team. It was a bought team. And while it was a great team, and the Yankees put out great teams, the spirit was just not what it was when the Brooklyn Dodgers played.
No, they were totally two different, totally different situations, to say the least. Well, Bill, let me get back to another topic, and that's Vice President Harris. Like Vice President Gore, she goes out and makes some outrageous statements. Now, this time, somehow comparing abortion to slavery, and once again, you know, the abortion movement, just like the climate change movement, needs to get a different message, telling the American people that abortion is like slavery, or somehow. I mean, she used a different line, but that's what she was trying to say. That's just totally ridiculous, Bill. All the court did was to take abortion back to the states. There's going to be lots of abortion in the United States. I mean, lots of people are going to have access to abortion in the United States. To tie this into slavery, That is so irresponsible. But just like the Vice President Gore, Vice President Harris gets away with it because nobody in the media will challenge her bill.
That's exactly right. I mean, we have found that if somebody is on the right side in the eyes of the press, the press looks the other way when they start making ridiculous statements. One of the biggest problems of the abortion movement is they never took their opposition seriously. They never realized that the pro-life people are serious people with a very serious argument and very great moral concerns. Well, when you strip that away, then you begin to treat people terribly. They've always treated the pro-life people terribly. They've never shown any responsibility for or interest in their arguments. People who were pro-life tried to be treated with respect and often had a very hard time with not only the organizers of sports and entertainment operations, but they've had a very hard time with the press. You would think by now the press would realize how serious the pro-life movement is.
Right. Well, I heard somebody say, a liberal was saying the other day, that we should learn from the pro-life movement because they organized themselves and they were voting out there. They were literally out there working for the last 40 or 45 years. I guess it kind of began with President Reagan. And the idea was, we're going to come up with a Supreme Court that does this, overturns Roe v. Wade. And they did it. They put six people in the court who did that bill. And that didn't happen by chance. That took a lot of work. It took a lot of out there knocking on doors and persuading people. And it seems to me that's what the abortion forces should learn, that the pro-life people did it the right way, Bill.
Well, that's the point. You know, I think there was a senator from Florida named Bob Graham who said whenever he was getting ready for a political debate, he always assumed that his opponent was intelligent and well-meaning. That's a very, very good thought. When you treat your opponent with respect, understand that they are well-meaning and that they really believe in this, you will be better yourself. You will come out as more civilized. But they were such extremists and are such extremists that to them, anything they could say about somebody who was pro-abortion was perfectly okay. And they got themselves into a lot of trouble because they became, in a way, the party of death.
They have. And right now, I think the big problem the Democrats have is their position on abortion is completely off the rails. I mean, because I think the American people are willing to say, okay, let's have access to abortion, but we're also going to have limitations to abortion, like it is in most countries. But what many of these abortion people want to do is basically you can have an abortion at any point of the pregnancy. And I know that that's what they have in California, but I don't think that's going to fly in most places, Bill.
Well, that's the point. I mean, the fact of the matter is they used to quote Europe as being an example of how abortion could exist in a free and democratic country. You'll notice there isn't very much talk about Europe anymore, the reason being that they went in the other direction. They began to see how complicated this issue was, and they stopped issuing these blanket decrees in favor of abortion. Now there are serious pro-life people in Europe arguing that point, the sanctity of life, and they are getting some results.
Right. No, I think so. I think most of the countries that arrived at the abortion issue through a parliamentary system, or I mean a legislative that is, where you had to make these compromises in the legislature, most of those countries have a system where abortion is allowed within certain weeks and then not after that. And that's where I think we're going. That's where I think we're going as a country. Right now, there's a lot of different things around the country, but I think eventually the example of Mississippi, 15 weeks, no abortion after 15 weeks, I think that's where most of the country is going to be in a few years, Bill, and then we're not going to have arguments about abortion every time somebody gets nominated to the Supreme Court. We're not going to have that anymore. And frankly, that's a blessing.
I think it is.
To be able to have people nominated to the Supreme Court without having to get into arguments about Roe v. Wade is perhaps one of the greatest consequences of all of this. Let's talk about the January 6th committee, Bill, because Lynn Cheney was on TV yesterday making her case, and I thought it was interesting. I saw the interview with on the Fox Morning show, and she was asked the question as to why the committee did not have cross examination, and she basically said, "Well, everybody who was at the committee was a Republican, meaning the people who testified." So there's no evidence that they would have answered the questions differently or changed their stories. Well, how does she know that? I mean, how does she know that under cross-examination, I would say the same thing that I would say without cross-examination, Bill?
Well, that's the point. And that goes under the category, again, of treating these arguments seriously, treating the people who possess them, the pro-life people, treating them seriously. They may in the end be right or wrong, but always assume that they're right. The lack of courtesy in the discussion, you're talking about an issue involving human life, you're talking about issues involving very high emotions, and you're talking about an issue that involves two beating hearts, not one. And yet, look at the way we're discussing it, and this problem of discussing abortion seriously goes way back to the 1950s. It was the same attitude. We are women, hear us roar, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, you know, getting back to the January 6th committee, they keep talking about this committee, but I see less and less people watching it. And to this date, they haven't really come up with anything that they can charge President Trump. You can say, and we've discussed it before, Bill, that President Trump was not at his best that day. I've criticized him for what he did. I was one of those who thought it was a mistake for him to speak that day. I said it before he spoke. I felt that they should have left the Congress alone, deal with it. The march, I guess you cannot control the march, but President Trump should not have been there. But that, you know, making a mistake that day or not having your best day, that doesn't mean you did something illegal. And I still have not seen from this committee anything that they could charge President Trump with. I really haven't. And it looks to me like more and more Americans are just saying, get this over with, because it's the price of gasoline that I'm worried about, Bill.
That's right. The American people have one set of interests, and the political class has another. And I think what the American people are indeed saying, as you implied, is that would you please start taking care of the problems of the people of the country, all the people of the country, rather than just a group. And I don't think that has resonated throughout the party yet.
No. One thing, Bill, changing the subject to New York City, we're having a lot of fun here in Texas. At least the political class is having a lot of fun with Mayor Adams saying that New York City does not have the resources to deal with these immigrants who are arriving, illegal immigrants or whatever, who are arriving. And a lot of people are having a lot of fun with that because when people in Texas or other places made the same argument, they were called racist for saying that there were no resources. And apparently New York City is saying, and probably correctly so, look, we cannot take all these people. And it is entertaining to watch it, but it's put people like Mayor Adams in a very difficult situation, because what are they going to do? I guess legally they have to accept them, Bill, because of the sanctuary nature of New York City. I don't know if they have to, but I think New York City is a sanctuary city, so they have to accept them, Bill.
Well, apparently they do. I think there will be court cases on this. But what the mayor was saying was that, no, we can't take more. And even for the ones you have, we need additional resources. This reminds me of what happened in the early 1970s when New York City came close to bankruptcy. And they appealed to the federal government for some emergency help, and President Ford turned them down, and the headline in the New York Daily News read, "Ford to City, Drop Dead." And that galvanized the attitudes of New Yorkers toward that current administration. No, it's, you know, the boys of summer are a baseball team. They play a fantasy game. It's not their entire life story, but I think by and large they've acquitted themselves well as wives, and not only as wives, as wonderful family members, but they've acquitted themselves well as citizens.
Yes, I think you're right about that. Well, let's talk a little bit about two more big stories. One is Hunter Biden. I have no idea what's going to happen with Hunter Biden, but I've been saying for months that if his name was Hunter Trump, I think he'd be getting a lot more publicity. But I really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with him. I don't know if he's going to be found guilty or not guilty. I mean, there's so much stuff in the air that you have to wonder, you know, is all of it false or true? But it's embarrassing, to say the least, for the Biden administration, especially at a time like this where everybody wants to get rid of him, Bill.
Well, that's true. You know, this is a situation that calls out for a true bipartisan investigation by Congress, because it touches on so many different areas. Not only is Hunter Biden a relative of the President of the United States, namely his son, but the idea of international trade with countries that are our enemies, I think, disturbs many, many people, and they want to know more about it, and they want it regulated.
Yeah. Well, the idea that somebody with so little, so few skills to be nice about Hunter Biden, the idea was somebody like this could get so wealthy and show up on the board of directors of so many companies that he doesn't have any experience in. He's either extremely lucky, Bill, or his last name has opened a few doors. I mean, maybe he's just that lucky. Maybe he's just the kind of guy who shows up and they put him on the board of directors because he's a friendly guy, Bill. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, that's right. He's just a heck of a nice guy. They actually
he is.
They took him off the street. He was out proselytizing for religion, and they just took him off the street because he was a nice guy. They had no idea that big button on his jacket saying Biden actually meant something. Just another nice guy who was being misunderstood. And
that's right.
I do think that people, according to polls at least, are becoming troubled by the fact that this man is still out on the street, that he's not been punished for anything, and that he is the opposite of what his father wants, which is a political class that is honest and believed. A bad situation. The president does not talk about it enough, because the Washington Press Corps probably thinks the problems have all been solved. You know, there was that little period at the beginning of the show. I had a full minute to discuss this and to resurrect Hunter, and I think we have.
Yes, we have. So I think Hunter Biden, there's a story out there. Professor Turley has been following this, and he feels, and he's a pretty serious guy, Turley, that something is going to happen. But I, you know, I'm one of those people, I'm a little skeptical, because if we remember the Russia thing with Trump, it was all based on anonymous sources. And so far, everything about Hunter Biden is the same thing. So I'm not going to invest myself in the Hunter Biden, you know, lynching, or the Hunter Biden indictment, that is. I'm not going to do that until I see a report that says he's being indicted for this or he's not being indicted for this. I do think, Bill, that if he's not indicted for something, that there's going to be a lot of skepticism. This is what I feel from people, that people feel that he's guilty, whether that's fair or unfair, but they feel that he's guilty, Bill.
There's no question about it. And the polls seem to show, at the very minimum, a great uneasiness on the part of the American people. But with the Congress in control of the president's party, I don't think you're going to see much activity there. And he runs the State Department as if it's a private police agency. So I think the only thing that can break this story open would be a Republican-controlled Congress.
Right. And that would, of course, would be next year. Well, let me finish by bringing up the fact that this is going to be a very busy week at Urgent Agenda, Bill, because you got a bunch of economic reports that are going to be coming out this week. In fact, Rick Moran over at PJ Media was saying that this is going to be a horrible week, that there's a lot of stuff that is going to be coming out this week. I mean, a lot of economic reports. And
that's
the
right.
Consumer, you know, the consumer, I guess the first one is the Consumer Confidence Index is going to be coming out. You've got other reports from the Federal Reserve on inflation. And the big one of all, which this one comes out on Thursday, is the GDP. And
yes.
I don't know. I have not seen the final report. Nobody has. But the fact that the administration is changing the definition of a recession, maybe that tells me that they're not expecting a good number, Bill.
That may very well be. Apparently, the White House is expecting bad numbers and is going to try to put some lipstick on it. But the American people see what the American people see. What's interesting about some of the numbers coming out this week is that they're ones whose effects people see every day. It's not an abstraction. It's not a theory. I was just at the supermarket yesterday, and I could not believe how much the prices had changed in 1 week.
Yes.
And also the disappearance of special prices. People know what this is costing them each week, and they feel desperate. They feel panicked because there's not much they can do about it. But they are going to eventually blame Biden, and I think that is going to have a big effect on the election. And if the Republicans run good races, and that is not guaranteed given the history of the Republican Party, they could really become not only the majority of Congress, but a decisive majority, and then maybe we'll see some results.
Yes, but you kind of get the feeling, you know, the Biden administration, they're already arguing that, well, just because you have two consecutive quarters of negative growth, that doesn't necessarily mean a recession. And I can just imagine the person at the grocery store, the lady at the grocery store, the mom at the grocery store, you know, hearing that and looking at the price of all things, sort of saying, I don't know if this is a recession, but I'm paying a heck of a lot more. My money just doesn't go as far as it did. And that's the way people see this. I mean, they don't get all
that's
hung
exactly
up on.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, they don't get hung up on the definition of what a recession is. They just, like you say, they're living their lives and they're seeing this. I mean, I can tell you here in Texas, Bill, the price of food going out to eat is unbelievable. I mean, restaurants that you would go for $20 are now $30. I mean, even some of the fast food places are $15.
The worst.
Yeah, $15. Yeah, I mean, even $15 and $16 to go out to eat, places that you could go for $10. So everybody's feeling that. And the rent, that's another big issue here with people. The price of rents are just going through the roof. People are having a very – when they get their renewals, they're having a very hard time, Bill.
That's exactly right. And many people have to move or they have to give up important things like college for their children.
Yeah.
That's something we ought to look at carefully because nothing is being done. And you're absolutely right. They see it with their eyes. They feel it. And they don't feel great warmth coming from Washington. Just kind of explanations as well, this is because of Donald Trump or something like that. And they know what the future is like if this doesn't improve.
That's right. And Washington, D.C. is obsessed with January the 6th, 2021.
Yes.
And the average person today is obsessed with July 25th, 2022. Because this is where they're living.
That's
they're not living a year and a half ago. Well, Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time. It's always great to have you. But I think this week you're going to be busy because there's some big reports coming up, Bill, that you're going to be telling us about at Urgent Agenda. And I don't know. I'm going to make a prediction that they're not going to be good stories, or at least not for the American economy, Bill.
Well, they may be grim stories, but they will be big stories. And, you know, we're coming up on the mark where we'll be only 3 months away from the election.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Thank you so much, Bill. Have a great day.
Same to you, Silvio. Talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is going to be a week of big stories, big economic stories. So keep an eye on Urgent Agenda and get some of the updates. Bye-bye, everybody. 104 here in Dallas right now. Talk to you later.